Welcome to the Wed Pro Podcast, the podcast for wed pros no matter their stage. We are your hosts, Katie and Roxy, and this is the Wed Pro Podcast.
Hi, welcome to this week's episode of our podcast. Lovely to be here. The sun is shining today, which makes us very happy, although I don't think it's here to stay, which is a little bit unfortunate.
No, it is for a while.
We're here. We're showing up, we're bringing you industry tips, advice, and today we're going to be sharing some misconceptions and things we hear about the luxury wedding market and how luxury wedding clients may buy your services and how they may interact and find the businesses that they want to work with for their weddings. And this is an area that people want to get into. We have quite a lot of that are wanting to either break into the looks market or even the very looks market, so very high net worth individuals. And yes, we have to market our business in a different way, but there's loads of myths and things out there that we wanted to just come on and debunk and share our experience with working with wedding professionals who work in the looks market and let you know what we see going on inside the market.
So before that, shall we have a little catch up? How have you been? What have you been up to? Tell us where you went at the weekend.
Yeah, I went on a hen do. And I'm still exhausted from it. So we went on a hen do, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Lovely time. But I'm just so tired. I didn't stay up super, super late and I don't drink, but it was just lots to do.
Full on.
And I'm
full on.
It was fun. There was a lot of noise in the house. So I didn't get much sleep. So, yeah, although I was in bed early, I didn't get a lot of sleep. But, yeah, it was lovely. You know, I've got lots of weddings to be a part of this year.
You've got a busy few weeks coming up.
Busy social calendar. But it's funny because this hen do that I was on, I was actually invited on another hen do on the same weekend, but couldn't go to that one. But that one looked a lot more calm, to be fair, but I couldn't go to that one. So, yeah, I'm still a little bit tired. The sun was out, which was amazing because we were able to sit in the sunshine and, you know, everything's just better when the weather's good, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I'm going on a hen do at the weekend as well and we are doing Mamma Mia theme. We only got that information with a week to go. Now, I think I've pulled it off, but that's not long enough to plan these things. Like, come on, guys. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. And the weather's supposed to be really good. So I've ordered one outfit. Yeah, I've ordered one outfit, but now I'm thinking, I'm going to sweat in that. So I'm going to, might go plan B. But what do you do with your hair? These are all the things that I'm now worried about. So I'm going to have to have a look on TikTok in a little bit. Some itch waves maybe, or sleep in some little
Yeah, you want that. Yeah, curl it. Oh, no, 70s was like dead straight. Poker straight hair.
I'm going to have a look. We all overthink these things, but I am looking forward to getting out and about, but also not been out on a hen do in 10 years. That's a long time. I'm a little bit scared. I'm going out with the cheerleading crew as well, the cheerleading mums, and they can be, some of them are a little bit wild. So watch this space. I'll keep you all updated on that one. The next podcast we do, I'll be like, hello, I'm back.
That's how I feel, and we're like 2 days from that's every day back. And yeah, okay, right, let's go into looks weddings. And I think for the purpose of this podcast, just define what we would justify as luxury wedding budget, and just for the purpose of podcast, just to give you an idea of what we're going to be talking about today in terms of the behavior of the brides and grooms and the myths that we definitely want to debunk. So we're talking really of weddings that are over $100,000 to maybe $500,000, not including the honeymoon. That's what we would say would sit in looks. And then ultra luxury wedding budget would be anything more than $500,000 or more, not including the honeymoon. I think it's really helpful to define what does a luxury wedding budget look like. So for the purposes of this training today, when we're debunking the myths that we hear and the things that we see going on inside the wedding industry, after working with businesses for a long time in this industry, and just from our own research as well, we thought that before we go into the consumer behaviour around luxury weddings and what brides and grooms are looking for in their suppliers and the things that we hear that are absolutely not true, we thought it was better really to define what is a luxury wedding budget. So really we're looking at anything that is more than 100 grand or more in pounds, up to £500,000, not including any honeymoon budget. And the ultra luxe end of the market would be anything over £500,000 or more. So anything over £500,000, again, not including that honeymoon. These people usually are high net worth individuals or really very high net worth individuals that have got, you know, super, super budgets. But not every bride or groom from the high net worth family or high net worth individual themselves has a luxury or ultra luxury wedding. Some do elope, some do, you know, spend a smaller amount of money on their marriage, and they choose to have a really scaled down affair. But the majority of people who have ultra high net worth assets and are ultra high net worth individuals do have this luxury wedding budget to blow on their wedding. So let's dive in into what we hear. And then for those of you that want to get into the luxe end of the market, hopefully by the end of this podcast, you'll know what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that I don't know about anyone else, but when we think about these people that sit in this area of the market, almost puts like a bit of a mindset block on it to begin with, because it's like, oh no, like these people are like ultra high net worth, not accessible at all. And then that brings with it, oh, they're going to be like this, going to be like that, and that stereotype. But actually, they're still people. And I think once we break down these walls, we actually will realize that as well. They are no different than you and me, other than, yes, they've got a massive whack of money to spend on stuff.
Okay, so one of the first things that we hear is that people want to be in the luxury end of the market because they feel that these clients aren't going to price shop and they're not going to negotiate. But contrary to that belief, luxury and ultra luxe wedding clients aren't afraid to negotiate. In fact, actually, more than half of luxury wedding clients expect their suppliers to negotiate or expect themselves to negotiate. So what do we mean by that? It's like if they hired a wedding planner or a wedding coordinator, they expected their wedding coordinator or their wedding planner to negotiate on their behalf. And I know what you're thinking in the wedding industry, like, oh my God, it's such a sign of disrespect. You know, the price is the price. And potentially you want to get into this area of the market to stop those price shoppers and inverted commas or people haggling with your pricing. In this area of the market, negotiation isn't a sign of disrespect. It's usually viewed as intelligent. And especially in other cultures, it's just what you do. It's almost like a sign of respect. And refusing to negotiate can make you look like you've got a lack of business experience or a lack of business acumen. And maybe you're inexperienced in this field of the market. So what I want you to look at as a negotiation, I want you to reframe this in your mind. Look at it as like an invitation to work together. It's not a rejection. It's an opportunity to work together to find something that's going to be mutually beneficial for the both of you. And this is a skill that you can improve over time. It's not something that, haggling is a skill, negotiating is a skill, but reframe in your mind that negotiation and look at it as more a collaboration. How can we collaborate on your wedding? And that can help you to just reframe that in your mind and also remove that intimidation from you. And I just want you to remember that it is a skill and it can be improved with practice. So if you're somebody that isn't comfortable with negotiation or comfortable working with clients at this level, it is a skill that can be practiced. And as with any skill, once you practice it, you will get better.
And remember, I was just going to say, when you said negotiation is more of a way to collaborate, think of it like that. You've got to remember, it's not a no, right? So they aren't saying no, they're just saying, can we work together to make this more doable? I like a bit of a, neg- a negotiation, but it is, it's not always felt that comfortable for me. So it's definitely like practice makes perfect with this one.
And I think as well, in English wedding tradition, and suppliers that potentially may work with more English traditional brides, it's about being educated about what happens in other cultures. So in other cultures, it can actually be a sign of respect to negotiate. Mm-hmm. So just having that awareness. So if you're wanting to tap into other markets, and quite often some of the other markets have bigger budgets because they have bigger weddings or multi festivities, multi-day weddings. So it's just about educating yourself on what are the do's and don'ts, how can you make sure you don't offend somebody? Because if you absolutely shut down the negotiation, it could be seen, like we said, as inexperienced or offensive, and you would never, ever want to do that. So make sure that you just educate yourself about, you know, what's appropriate and what isn't appropriate with the different types of cultures, for sure.
Okay, so myth number two is, we hear this all the time, and this is another mindset belief, is that luxury clients in these looks, like super looks couples, are always hiring a professional wedding planning company. And this is true for a majority of these higher end couples. They do hire planners, but not all of them follow this trend at all. So it can really vary. Some may opt to work with catering managers at the venue, you know, friends with relevant expertise, or estate managers or executive assistants. And it's really essential to recognize that referrals may come from loads of different sources and not just those planners.
So have a think about where you're getting your referrals from. Have a think about having marketing strategies that extend beyond just reaching out to planners, and having a think about connecting with the venues too, networking with luxury client referrals outside the wedding industry as well. We know inside of this area of the wedding industry, it's like, it's normally who you know.
Who you know, yeah. It's
and also not to put a block on the investment to get in front of people. So if you need to be in certain places, if you need to attend certain events, whether it be award events, networking opportunities, business lunches, maybe it's a conference, whatever it is, to get in front of the people, you need to look at it as like a return on investment. If you're a wedding planner and you're taking a percentage of the overall budget of a wedding, and that client is spending £2 million on their wedding, and you're charging 10% of the wedding budget, you're going to make 200 grand off that wedding. So, you know, have a think about where do you need to show up, and look at it like a return on investment, going to networking events or maybe paying to be part of member clubs or places like Soho House in London, so that you can be mingling in the right circles, but not to just look inside the wedding industry as well, to look at other opportunities.
Yeah, it's about getting your name in front of those right types of people. And I would actually go as far as having a strategy, like a proper strategy planned out for this, like set aside a budget for it, so you're able to get yourself in front of these people. Like you said there, that return on investment, it can be absolutely huge, but you've just got to think outside the box a little bit with this.
Yeah. The next thing, I think this really fits into this one as well, is like that all referrals are coming from word of mouth at this level. And that's not true. Luxury clients also use Google to find their wedding suppliers. And despite age-old advice suggesting otherwise, still a significant number of luxury weddings find their suppliers through Google searches. So it is essential, whatever level of the market you're at, to be optimizing your online presence and SEO strategies to attract those high fit leads from your search engine results. So successful marketing in any level of your business involves a number of strategies, including SEO, networking, brand awareness, but don't underestimate the power of Google in reaching your wedding clients. So have a keyword strategy, ensure that your SEO is good, consider hiring an external company. You want to be looking at off-site and on-site SEO for your wedding business, and ensuring that you're pulling in people from Google as well. Don't neglect Google because you think, oh, you know, I'm high-end. No. Everything's going to come from word of mouth. It's not, you know.
No. It's multi-pronged still... attack here, multi-pronged.
Yeah, sure.
So myth number four, and this one I hear so, so often, is that luxury and mega high-end clients want to delegate everything and not be involved in the wedding planning process at all. Whilst this is true for some aspects of their wedding, they will want to delegate some of it, but not all of your, those clients will be seeking complete delegation. So depending on their age, so if they're an older couple, they might want to get involved with different aspects of their wedding than if they were a younger couple, but they still want to be involved with some aspects. And, you know, we do hear this phrase all the time, money rich, time poor, but it will just depend on the type of couple that they are and what they value to be really important to them. So it's really essential for you guys as wedding businesses to understand the client's preferences and adapt your approach accordingly, emphasizing that collaboration and involvement. And that can really resonate with those super looks couples a lot more than you actually think.
Yeah, I think this is about as well just really understanding who your target client is and not just focusing on one element of what your service provides, but actually really delving deep and thinking, what are the benefits here? What can, you know, what am I selling? Rather than selling on features, to be selling on benefits. And we bang on about this all the time. But it's more about, you know, not just saying, you don't need to be involved. I'm going to come in. I'm going to sort everything. This is especially true for wedding planners. But I think quite across the board, a lot of wedding professionals like the fact that they can come in, they can take stress off the couple can be rest assured that they're handled in a professional service and that they are investing in a professional. Yes, all of that is important. Absolutely, it's important. And we're absolutely not saying to remove all of this from your marketing and your site. Don't just assume that these couples don't want any involvement in their wedding planning whatsoever. And, you know, they just want to turn up and have everything taken care of. I think especially those younger generations, they really value what their friends are thinking. They value the influence from their friends, from their peers. And they value that collaboration aspect in terms of knowing that their wedding has been a collaboration. And I think just across the board, that is what we're providing, whether it's high end, low end, somewhere in the middle, it's a collaboration between you and your client. You know, whatever service you bring, whether it's stationery, music, whatever it is, it's not about you coming in and just thinking, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It's always a collaboration. So remove anything in your
like preconceptions of what they might want. And exactly like you were saying there about wherever you sit in this market, it's about listening and understanding what your couples want. There's no point going in there like, I can do this, because you might be completely off the mark. So it's about listening in those initial consultations and really understanding what the client wants, whether that's the more budgety weddings or super, super looks. These people still have feelings. They still have wants, needs and desires. And it's your job to make sure that you can provide a service that they are.
And usually the pressure. The pressure is more, right? Usually more guests. There's maybe more activities. Maybe there's travel involved. There's the pressure is there. Like it's much, much higher. Okay, so the next thing we want to talk to you about is trust. And this is something that we see businesses think that if they are serving this looks element of the market, then automatically they're going to be seen as an expert. And automatically with that, they're going to have loads of trust with their clients and loads of know, like, and trust. And yes, trust is essential in any client-supplier relationship, but it's unrealistic to just expect that people are going to trust you without things to back that up. It's not just because you serve high end that you're automatically going to be trusted. Building that trust is going to require you to have open communication, transparency, and for you to be able to demonstrate your expertise. I think there's a thing that if you're working at this level, you don't need to prove that why you are at this level. And what wedding professionals need to realize is that they still should be focused on showing their clients why they're the best, why they're trustworthy, and, you know, what experience they've got, rather than telling their clients why they're trustworthy. And, you know, sometimes at this level of the market, clients are a little bit more slower to trust, you know?
I agree with that, yeah.
Start having things on your website, you know, what are you doing on your website? What are you doing in your marketing that can really show that you're going to do that really great job for their wedding. Wedding clients are still human, and every human has baggage. And luxury clients, yes, they are more used to hiring experts, but that doesn't mean that they're going to automatically trust you. And Gen Z in particular do not trust easily. And this is an entire generation that is more aware of suspicious behaviour, whether it's online or from their peers.
They are clued up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this generation, and we potentially saw it in the millennial generation as well, they're just a little bit slower to trust. And just saying, trust me, I'm an expert, it doesn't do too well with today's brides and grooms, and they'll just get offended at, and you getting offended as well when people don't automatically trust you or don't automatically trust your recommendations or your ideas means you're going to spend a lot of time not getting booked. So have a look at your website, have a look at your social media. What do you do that is currently, you know, inspiring trust? Are there ways you can improve how you show and not tell, how you show potential clients that you are trustworthy as an expert? And have a look over your marketing and see what you're doing there.
And I think as well, they are slower to trust at this specific level because there's that added pressure, like you said with the last point. Yeah. There's that added pressure, you know, almost like putting on a show to their friends, their families, that's that expectation that this wedding's going to be absolutely incredible. So they need to make sure that they are in the right hands. So the next thing that is a bit of a myth is that these kind of clients are expecting you as wedding suppliers and wedding businesses to also live that luxury lifestyle. Now, I mean, some may not. It doesn't actually matter. Contrary to popular belief, you don't have to live that lifestyle to be able to work with these types of clients. You know, you've still got that professionalism and attention to detail. Yes, they are crucial, but clients are prioritizing expertise and quality of service over any of your personal lifestyle choices, really.
Yeah, I think they absolutely expect you to be an expert in your field. And this is what we said in the last point. And, you know, to be able to anticipate their needs and to meet their exacting standards that they have, to be educated in this area of the market. So that might be hospitality, luxury service details, but they are not fooled by somebody's attempt to just blend in as one of them. So your luxury high net worth individuals know that you likely don't have, you know, millions and millions in liquid assets. They probably know that you don't travel in private jets or, you know, that you're not on your yacht during the slow season. But the thing is, there is a level of expectation of your service. So a lot of the time we hear, oh, you know, I need to look luxury to be able to sell luxury. And yes, on one hand, it is important that you adhere to a level of professionalism and you look put together. Well,
there's like a standard there, but it doesn't have to be, you know, forking out money on materialistic things.
I'd expect this at any level of the market for you to be turned up. Well groomed, put together, but you know, you don't need to be dripping in designer. And that's not to say that you can't if you want to, and you know, you can't spend on luxury goods if you enjoy them, but it's not a requirement in your marketing to be able to work with the luxury brides and grooms. You don't need to get yourself into any debt trying to keep up with the clients that you want to work with in this misguided belief that a luxury client is only going to hire people who share their lifestyle.
You don't have to be keeping up with the Kardashians.
So have a think about, you know, if you're somebody that is doing this, is somewhere that you could spend that money better in your business, in another area of your business. Does what you wear in your work reflect your personal style and brand you as somebody that pays attention to detail? So we're talking about, you know, clean shoes, not having maybe clippy cloppy shoes for running a wedding, looking put together, having an emergency pack on. These are the things that are going to really make you stand out.
Like, for example, like hoodie or a nice logo embroidered apron. Do you know what I mean? Giving off a different vibe here without, I'd say an apron would cost as much as a hoodie, right? So it's just about having those choices.
And just looking smart and clean. Mm-hmm. I think what's important at any level of the market, really. But I don't want people to think, oh, you know, I need to get into debt.
I need some Louis to get this book in.
Yeah, it's not the case at all, for sure. Right, the next thing we hear is that this end of the market, these luxury high net worth individuals, don't want to be bothered and will feel that you are desperate if you follow up on an inquiry that they've made or a proposal. It's going to make you look desperate or maybe not exclusive enough to be a luxury brand. But the idea that you shouldn't follow up with potential clients is just ridiculous, and it's actually causing harm to your business. It's going to negatively impact your sales and then subsequently future referrals coming down the line. Following up on a proposal or a inquiry does not make you look desperate. It makes you look like a professional that's doing your job.
Yeah, and I think in those early initial consultation stages, you know, you say to them, when I send this, like, then I'll give you a follow-up if you are mapping out the expectation. And yes, these types of people are mega busy. Everyone is mega busy, and it's so easy to forget to reply. So you are actually doing them a service by giving them a little nudge, saying, hey, just checking if you'd received X, Y, and Z. It doesn't have to be in a pushy way, but they will be thankful, actually, I think, for the little reminder.
Yeah.
Even, like, for us or, like, for anybody, it doesn't matter what level they're at all. That's, like, a total, like, that's the wrong way to see this. You are losing money by not following up at any level.
Yeah, I think the thing to think about is that not following up with a potential client shows them that you don't value their business and you're potentially not the person to work with them. And, you know, the idea that if a client really wants to work with you, then they will reach out after you send that first initial quote or that first proposal. It's really just a nice idea in theory. And I think at any end of the market, follow-up is important. It's not just a thing for lower end weddings or mid-tier weddings. It's just as important as we get to looks, ultra-looks, wedding budgets. It's not how life pans out for people to just reply and remember to reply. You know, emails get buried. People reply to you in their head and actually forget to type it out. Work gets in the way, life gets in the way. And, you know, your client's wedding isn't going to be their only responsibility in their life. And you and your company and your business, it's not going to be their number one priority, especially potentially they may still be even interviewing other wedding professionals before deciding. Their life does not revolve around you, and nor should it. Like, weddings are your full-time job. It's not their full-time job, is it? So a follow-up is definitely worth it. And just to think again, back to that example, if you're charging 10% of their wedding budget at £2 million, you need to send up a follow-up email because that's going to be a 200 grand booking. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just one of those times where the industry has just lost the plot, you know?
Literally, yeah.
If you're booked out...
Come on, guys.
If you're booked out with your dream clients and you are still turning down perfect for you inquiries left, right and centre, then I'm sure maybe you're somebody that could potentially skip the follow-up. But at that level, you also need to raise your prices. But that, you know, that's a conversation.
And you're probably not listening to this podcast.
But that's not a situation for 99.9% of the professionals we work with. Yes, rejection is absolutely scary and it doesn't feel great, but it's part of the job and it's part of being a business owner. You know, self-sabotaging, thinking, oh, I'm not going to follow up because I don't want to come across as desperate or pushy. Get over yourself and go and get your money. Like, when it comes to following up, what is falling through the cracks most often? How can you improve this? When you're on that call, let them know that you're going to ring them in a couple of days. Maybe set up that call for them and say, right, we're going to follow up in a few days. Let's get a date in the diary so that you can walk them through your proposal, answer any questions. You're not only then being proactive in not leaving them to their own devices, but you're also going to cut down on that ghosting as well.
I was just chuckling because we love a follow-up, especially you, Katie. Like, every day you're like, oh, have you heard from so-and-so? Oh, what about that lady who, you know? And I'm like, followed up with that person as well. Because that is where that extra money is.
It is where the money is.
Yeah.
80% of people aren't following up enough, and we know this. And, you know, it's not a no until it's a no. And even when it's a no, some of the time it's still not a no.
It's still not a no. We're like, well...
No, some of the time it's just a no for right now. But I think don't send a Calendly link. Don't let them book in for themselves. Literally just say, I'd love to connect again on Thursday or Friday to walk you through the proposal, answer any questions you have. Does 1 p.m. or 3 p.m. work for you?
Have you got your diary with you now?
Yeah. I think
get this scheduled in.
high end needs high touch, and we love a bit of high touch, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We high touch on everything we do, whether it's on Instagram.
If you followed us over on Insta, you've more than likely had a high touch message from us.
You've received the high touch.
And we want you to reply as well. On that note, if we've had, you know, a little bit of contact on Insta and you've got any questions about anything in your business, please do DM us. We are here to help you.
For sure. So I think this notion that, oh, following up is going to make me seem desperate, that, I don't know where it's come from.
No, but get rid of that thought.
Absolutely harming your business. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the advice we've given today is really will work for either end of the market.
I agree.
But it's about looking at your messaging, ensuring that you're building trust, which is important at all areas of the market, ensuring that you aren't making assumptions about the type of client that you're receiving, getting rid of the assumptions that you might have in your head that maybe they don't want to be involved in the planning process and they just want to turn up on the day. And that's not necessarily true, like we've talked about. Debunking the myths that they're not going to find you on Google, so you don't need to worry about that and you just need a referral strategy. I think in any business, having a multi-layered strategy that covers referrals, SEO, website, marketing language, and at this level in your business, if you are going after high net worth weddings, weddings that are 100K and up, and remember, that may not mean 100K on your service, it's overall spend on the wedding. So you may be somebody that charges 4, 5, 6K or 10K or 20K to work with you. These figures would fit in a 100K wedding, but whatever level of the market that you are at, it's about knowing where you sit and using the language. So investing in copywriters, investing in networking events, investing in getting in front of the people that are going to get you in front of these clients. I'm not thinking that you can do it all on your own. And you may be able to do it on your own, but it's going to take you a lot longer. And, you know, look at it like a return on investment, making sure that your website is SEO'd, making sure that you're building that trust on your website, that you've got an amazing copywriter on your website that is taking your clients through a journey, that's building up trust with them, ensuring that your follow-up process is proper, then is going to get you that 30, 40K booking. And how many 40K bookings do you need? So I think I just wanted to bring up the fact that we hear quite often people quite reluctant to invest in their business. First of all, it's like tax deductible. So any education that you invest in your business, any things that you need to operate your business or run your business, such as a copywriter or somebody to come and do your SEO or marketing or whatever, or even investing in somebody to come and take those looks photographs for you. So having somebody follow you around at the wedding to take the photographs, think of that as like, this is future marketing. So that's going to be able to go on your socials, that's going to be able to go on your website, and you don't need to rely on the photographer sending you things, which, you know, always gets missed, doesn't it? Like the photographer,
or it's really difficult, or you know, you have to chase.
Yeah, and the photographer contract is with the couple, it's not with you and your business. So, you know, there may be stipulations about how you can use that, those images, what you can do with them. I know, like, editing them, for example, would be a no-go. So investing in having somebody follow you around to take content for you, you've got all of this stuff to go forward. And I think I just wanted to bring up investing since we invested in our business. And when you want to level up, whatever level you're at, when you want to level up, I think, you know, it is then about investing and where.
Yeah, there becomes a time when you hit that ceiling of what you can do on your own and it's timed, okay, now it's time to invest.
Yeah, whether that is in another person or whether it's in education or whether it's in a coach or whether it's in whatever it is, marketing, team members, more equipment, whatever it is, better equipment, you know, there comes a point, and especially at this end of the market, like, they're expecting the best of the best. Like, to not be investing in yourself, you're not going to be chosen compared to other people. These people expect the best of the best. So yeah, like, hopefully
a little bit of a rant at the end there, a little bit of an extra little point there for you all, but really, really valuable, that end piece there.
Yeah, I hope that we've given you some bits and bobs and some insights into what we've seen happen in the luxury wedding planning market, and we've got rid of some of the myths that we hear along the way, and we'll see you next time, where we'll be more trends, more topics, more wedding hints and tips inside the wedding industry and how you can grow your business. So until then, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Have a good one. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wed Pro podcast. Full transcribes of this episode plus every other episode we have done are available at www.theweddingbusinesshub.com/blogs. Thanks so much for listening. If you do have any questions about this episode or anything else at all, you can email us at info@theweddingbusinesshub.com. And if you are loving our episodes, which I know you are, make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button so you can stay updated with any new episodes that land. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.